The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on plants that heal. How can we prevent or reduce breast cancer? I'll share that with you. What's going on in the brains of Gulf War vets? Well, finally, the good news is we can prove that there is abnormal blood flow. So when they were saying they had problems and the doctors were saying we can't prove it, now we can. So hopefully a lot of people get help that otherwise wouldn't. The single most important antioxidant in your body, I'm going to go into depth on. And then more on our environmental impact. Every day I talk about the environment. Today, for those who are in denial of the impact of global warming, I'm going to take you through a whole biology lesson and show you what's in that water out there that we didn't have before and what it's doing to you and why the water, the oceans, can be extraordinarily dangerous, including what you consume that is from the ocean. My guest in the third part of our program will be Curtis Ellis. We're going to talk about Obama in Congress, Clinton in Congress, Bush in Congress, and how it really has no bearing on what they ultimately do. They are going to go ahead and be supporting globalized projects. They all support NAFTA. They support all these trade agreements. What does that do for us? What does it do for the average person? What does it do for the workers in the United States? How, on the one hand, can they be saying that we want more jobs in America, and yet they're exporting these jobs? Curtis Ellis has been working in the media for over 20 years. He worked at CNN, Andrea Mitchell at NBC News, CBS's 60 Minutes, and Associated Press. He was a reporter, NPR's All Things Considered, hosted his own syndicated radio talk show. He'll be here talking about what he and others are doing to help the American worker. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a lot to share. Let's get right to it. The latest research out of Germany from a professor, Claude, shows that we can help women prevent breast cancer. It's nice as they're aligning their thoughts with what we've seen here in the United States, those who are using holistic methods of helping people, chiropractors, naturopaths, dietitians, physicians, and holistic nurses. Phytoestrogens is the key. Now, we know that phytoestrogens are plant compounds which in the human body can attach to the receptors of the female sexual hormone estrogen and which are taken in with our diet. There are hundreds of studies that show that these phytoestrogens are protective plant hormones, protective from breast cancer. Now, as the team that did the research, they summarized the results of many studies in what was called a major meta-analysis. That means meta, M-E-T-A. Many different studies were analyzed. And here's what their conclusions were. A diet rich in phytoestrogens lowers the risk of developing breast cancer after menopause. Now, these University of Heidelberg researchers wanted to find out whether phytoestrogens also have an influence on the course of breast cancer. And they took a look at the diet. They examined over 1,000 women's bloods and found that that we can now show that when you eat foods like your green vegetables and cruciferous vegetables, you are indeed preventing breast cancer. So that's good. So keep eating your cruciferous vegetables if you want to prevent breast cancer. I've been working with Gulf War vets for a long time. I have produced 3 award-winning documentaries on Gulf War syndrome, Killing Our Own, in order to bring their plight to the American public's attention. these individuals, and now they're over 750,000, over 70,000 have died, not due to natural causes. These are people who died because of Gulf War Syndrome. And yet, every single White House, Bush Sr., Clinton, repeatedly, Bush Jr. and Obama have refused to acknowledge that Gulf War Syndrome is real. The Veterans Administration and the Department of Defense also have refused to acknowledge it. Unfortunately, the mainstream media has not been on the side of the suffering vet. All that the VA has to say is they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, or this was a personality disorder that they brought with them when they came in. As absurd as this may sound, reporters are not challenging the official position. Here's the latest to show that these vets are suffering real conditions. This is from the peer review journal Radiology. Quote, study finds chronic abnormal brain blood flow in Gulf War veterans. Blood flow abnormalities found in the brains of veterans with Gulf War illness have persisted 20 years after the war, and in some cases have gotten worse. Quote, we confirm that abnormal blood flow continued or worsened over the 11-year span since first being diagnosed, which indicates that the damage is ongoing and lasts long term. That was a Dr. Haley, Chief of Epidemiology, Department of Internal Medicine and Clinical Sciences at the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center in Dallas. Quote, we also identified a special MRI procedure that better diagnoses and distinguishes between the three main types of Gulf War illness. So, another study that now means we have 24 separate and unique studies showing that when people have Gulf War Syndrome, they have less mitochondrial activity, they have more neurological damage, they have more susceptibility to autoimmune conditions. The part of the brain, the hippocampus, is the part of the brain responsible for forming long-term memories and helping with spatial navigation. Gulf War vets have enormous problems neurologically. Memory loss, confusion, irritability, disorders in motion and control. All of this shows impairment of the hippocampus. Now, how do you end up having this happen? Well, why don't we start with the most obvious culprits, the vaccines? I just finished filming, finished pre-filming interview with Dr. Garth Nicholson, as well as two of the leading toxicologists in the United States. The other two are professors. They're all going to be filmed for a new program I'm doing on to help the Gulf War vets. Nicholson said this, that when all of these vets, which is virtually every single member of the armed forces, when they were given anywhere between 10 to 20 vaccines, none of those vaccines had been tested properly for safety and efficacy. And in fact, the FDA gave a waiver to allow experimental vaccines into these vets. He said they never tested. Not only did they not test those vaccines, they don't test any vaccine for Mycoplasma incognitus, which is bacterium. And he said that's what you find causes neurological damage. And we're finding that in all these vets, he told me. So finally, a piece of the puzzle. We knew that a lot of Gulf War vets, I interviewed over 1,200, said they had Gulf War Syndrome before ever getting on the plane to go to the Gulf. It happened right after they got their vaccines. Others got over there and got more vaccines and got sick over there. And there were other things that can contribute, of course, like depleted uranium and other toxins in the environment. But that was the heavy one. And now Nicholson's work, along with these toxicologists, show that this mycoplasm we're finding in high levels in children who have autism. So I'm going to suggest that any parent who has a child who's been diagnosed with autism, have your child's blood tested for mycoplasma. Because the good news is we can kill that mycoplasma. And the bad news is that no one's going to look for it, ever. And that's in your vaccines. I just finished a meeting upstairs. I'm writing a whole new article on challenging everything about the safety of vaccines, the efficacy, and I also am challenging that vaccines cannot be proven in a given individual to confer absolute immunological protection. And yet we say vaccines, immunology, immunize with a vaccine. They have never been proven. And I have brought in a physician who is just working on this project in verification and deconstructing my arguments. Meaning, I put together scientific literature that is always independent but peer-reviewed, and then I say, show me where I'm wrong. I would rather you show me an error anywhere in this whole paper than have someone out there who is pro-vaccine talking head for the vaccine industry say, oh, you made a mistake on this. So right now, we're adding a whole new section on this mycoplasma because it could be a major contributing factor, certainly to Gulf War illness, autism, and other neurological damage. And so that's what they just found in this study. So good for them. So we're making a little bit of strides here on behalf of all the sick Gulf vets who have all been abandoned by the government, by their presidents, by Congress. It's just disgusting. Now, we need antioxidants in our body. Most people get their antioxidants by eating foods. The trouble is you can have a duality in your diet. You eat an orange, you eat an apple, you eat grapes, people do eat fruits. But then they drink alcohol, or they'll eat a piece of fried chicken, or they'll have french fries, and those are highly inflammatory, and so you set off an inflammatory cascade. In effect, you turn on a fire in your body, and then the antioxidants has to rush to that spot to trap the free radicals that the inflammation causes. It works this way. French fries, pizza, inflammation. Inflammation, changing biochemistry. Changing biochemistry, massive amounts of free radicals are produced. Free radicals alter the DNA of cells. What's the only protection you have? Antioxidants. But the trouble is you're only getting about 1/1000th of the antioxidant protection your cells need in order to assure that your cells won't be damaged. So this information provided by Dr. David Jockers, Natural News, is important. Why? Because we're all every day under oxidative stress. Oxidative stress simply means when you inhale, you're taking in oxygen. When you exhale, you're exhaling carbon dioxide. In the conversion between that, your cells take up the oxygen, and a process called ATP, adenosine triphosphate, you create energy in the mitochondria. It's like putting wood into a wood-burning stove, or propane through a gas line, and you hit the button, and now you have a flame. Or coal in a locomotive engine, boom, you end up with heat, and that causes steam, and that gets you moving. Oxidation is the key to life. Without oxidation, you die. But the byproduct of oxidation is oxidative stress. Now, if you're taking lots of antioxidants, you're drinking lots of juices, you're taking a lot of phytonutrients, you're trapping a lot of that. And hence, you're slowing down the damage. Well, to combat this stress and damage to the body utilizes antioxidants and a whole different variety. Well, there's one that's really a superstar. It's called glutathione. And it's a very special peptide molecule that provides the greatest antioxidant protection. And it recharges the other antioxidants within the body. Every cell in your body produces glutathione. And many longevity scientists believe that the level of glutathione in our cells is predictive of how long we will live. Now, this is logical considering the wealth of essential bodily processes that glutathione plays a role in. Glutathione has been coined the master antioxidant due to its essential role in maintaining vitamin C and vitamin E in their active form. Also, glutathione is like the cell's security guard, protecting the genetic equipment from outside attack. Now, it was about 6 years ago at an international conference on anti-aging that I heard a scientist say that the average person has approximately 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day. So let's just say we have anywhere from 60 to 100 trillion cells. Multiply that times 10,000, and that gives you an idea of how much damage occurs each day. Every time you have a cup of coffee, an artificial sweetener, you're in a polluted environment, you're dealing with stress inappropriately, you have fried food, alcohol in any quantity, all that creates that 10,000 gene alterations per day per cell. Glutathione disarms many of these free radicals before they wreak havoc and cleans up the oxidative stress-related damage that has occurred. It plays a big role in the immune function, and studies have shown that glutathione strengthens T cells, which are critical for modulating the immune system, and these are the cells that coordinate the attack against pathogenic bacteria and viruses, etc., while at the same time keeping tissue damage and autoimmune responses in check, meaning it keeps your immune system from overreacting, which could trigger allergies and autoimmune reactions. It fights cellular toxins. It works to eliminate carcinogens from intracellular environments. It heals damaged cells. It's constantly working 24/7 against disease, toxins, viruses, pollutants, radiation, drugs, oxidative stress. But do we make enough? No. Our liver is always overloaded with fat, with heavy metals. The central nervous system, the breast, the prostate are the most susceptible areas. And many researchers credit the increase in neurological disease and cancer to depleted cellular glutathione. So get your glutathione and every day. Now, I don't believe in taking glutathione capsules because they're very poorly absorbed as such, unless they're reduced glutathione. Rather take the precursors, meaning that which creates glutathione, glycine, glutamic acid, cysteine, and alpha-lipoic acid. These are all good. Now, if you don't take any supplements, then make sure you eat avocados, onions, garlic, spinach, cruciferous vegetables. They will help you there as well. And now, the latest on, boy, aren't we getting good health in the United States? Well, if you hear the pundits on television, we have the best medical system. No, we don't. We have the best health care. Far from it. Here's the latest from The Lancet. Every other American will be obese in just the next 20 years. Every other American. Actually, the next 18 years. That means we will have approximately 170 million Americans in the next 18 years who will be obese. And with that, heart disease, diabetes, cancers, neurological damage, digestive problems are going to occur. But surely our Surgeon General is talking about the dangers of high fructose corn syrup. No, he isn't. And that we have people at the FDA and USDA and U.S. Public Health Service who are really finding the best minds out there, of which we have many, to talk about lifestyle modification. No, they don't. Not a single one. We don't have a single person I would respect in government at any level talking about how we can get healthy. But surely the Clinton health care bill, which all the Democrats and some Republicans applauded, that will do the trick. And there's not a single word in there about health, actually. How do you get healthy? But why should we be confused by that? Why should we even question the idea that the largest single expenditure in the world, of all the bills paid in the world by any government, the largest single bill that we pay, the largest indebtedness, dwarfing by twice the military-industrial spy complex budget, is something that people, the Democrats who are so arrogant, such conceit, it just defies reason. Oh, we love this bill. Why? Why don't you wake up with the brains one day and question it, deconstruct it? Is there any health in the health care bill? The answer is no. Can we get healthier by following it? No. Will it help us reverse disease? No. Will it help us prevent disease? No. Oh, stupid me. I would have thought that if you're going to spend $2.7 trillion this year on health with a health care bill, that surely health would have some part of it. Well, Gary, you're just naive and stupid. Okay, so I'm naive and stupid. How am I naive? Well, don't you realize this bill never had anything to do with people's health? Just like the war on terror had nothing to do with terror. Going into Iraq had nothing to do with getting rid of weapons of mass destruction. Going into Vietnam had nothing to do with stopping another attack that didn't happen, a false flag at the Gulf of Tonkin. Do you want me to go on with 3,000 other examples of how the American public had become nothing more than just lab rats? All right? It was all about the insurance industry. Who got seven meetings with Obama privately in the White House? Who was the Democratic legislator that is the biggest sponsor of the pharmaceutical industry? It was the for-profit insurance company, the for-profit pharmaceutical company, and the for-profit private hospital associations who controlled, wrote, managed, manipulated everything about this. They got what they wanted. They will make several trillion dollars in profit over the next decade. And yet we got PR spin about how this is so good for us. No, it's not. So do we have anyone, just raise a hand, anyone in our goddamn government who wants this to be healthy? No. How about in the White House, Congress? Surely someone is doing something to say, look, grow up. Here's what's causing disease. Here's how to prevent it. No. How about no one? But let's not talk about truth. That scares us. Let's not talk about change. It offends us. Let's just keep the illusion going with platitudes. We should also be so lucky to walk around with monitors and having someone else tell us what to think, and we'll just be the smiling face behind it. Here's some truth that will help you. Hawthorne. Hawthorne belongs to the rose family, also known as haw, or whitethorn, or haybush, or mayflower. It's a pretty plant, and it grows tall, and has a spiny bush with little white flowers, a strong scent. But what's it do? It helps your heart. It is improves circulation, reduces cholesterol levels, regulates blood pressure. It also helps preserve collagen, which helps to form connective tissue and therefore helps you if you have arthritis and joint problems. It can help protect against damage caused by free radicals. So hawthorn each day makes a difference. One other thing, you want to help kill cancer cells? You bet. Turmeric. Researchers at UCLA, Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center have found that curcumin, the main component in the spice turmeric, suppresses a cell signaling pathway in human saliva that drives the growth of head and neck cancers. The inhibition of the cell signaling pathway was also correlated with reduced expression of a number of pro-inflammatory cytokines, or signaling molecules, in the saliva that promote cancer growth. So, quote, the study shows that curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, can work in the mouths of patients with head and neck malignancies and reduce activities that promote cancer growth. That was published in the American Association of Cancer Research. Want to slow down Alzheimer's? B-complex. According to the International Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry, quote, a new study has found that large doses of B vitamins can slow the cognitive decline in older people that is the precursor to dementia such as Alzheimer's. That was done at Oxford University. Some of the latest ways that we can keep ourselves vital, healthy, and in good condition. Now, here's our issue of the day. I'm going to share this issue, and then we'll come back with some of your letters and go to our guest, a little newsmaker guest coming up here. Not a little guest, but it's a newsmaker topic. And this is from Paul Harris from Common Dreams. The decline and fall of the American middle class, the heart of our political malaise, is that the middle class, so long a powerhouse of U.S. prosperity, is being crushed as never before. No one can accuse the candidates on stage at the debate of not discussing a broad range of topics. They talked about big issues like Social Security, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, energy independence, repealing health care reform, and the need for job creation. And they talked about small issues as well. But missing from the debate, and in fact, much current discussion of American politics is missing, is the single biggest issue facing the country, the destruction of the American middle class. For stories on how America is bifurcating into haves and have-nots, with precious little in between, you have to dive behind the headlines of the latest Washington political bun fight and find the devil in the details. Take a story that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. The tale is nominally one about marketing strategy, and it looks at how giant firm Procter & Gamble sells its household goods to its customers. But the picture that emerges is terrifying. Procter & Gamble, it transpires, is cutting back on marketing to the disappearing middle classes, instead selling more and more to either high-income or low-income customers and abandoning the middle. Other big firms like Heinz are following suit. The piece reveals there is even a word for this strategy. It is called consumer hourglass theory, because it denotes a society that bulges at the top and bottom and is squeezed in the middle. Now, how bad is it? Here's the ringer. The story contains some scary figures, such as the fact that the net worth of the middle fifth of the American households has plunged by 26% in the last 2 years, or that the income of the medium American family, adjusted for inflation, is lower than it was 12 years ago. Now, here's my idea on this. We have many economies. We do not have one economy. We have the economy for the non-working poor. But they are powerless. They have no advocates. And they do not form political blocks. They're not out there marching. They're not going to. We have the gated community set, the upper middle class. They look at the world from a protected perspective. No matter what their political persuasion, they don't want to go through the discomfort of getting out of the areas where they have a lifestyle they're happy with and let others take care of the hard work. The wealthy class does not engage in social protest. The super wealthy never do. And then the professional class, with rare exception, there are a few exceptions, lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, professors, again, rare exception, you're not going to see them joining protests, and you're not going to see them putting themselves at risk of being arrested. Then you have your working middle class. And as long as they're able to pay their bills, as long as they're able to have a standard of living, you will never see them. Well, who does that leave? Ah, the one group nobody pays attention to. When you talk about middle class, they keep focusing on the wrong middle class. They're not focusing upon the working middle class, or those who are unemployed or underemployed, or those who are making now $7 an hour instead of what they've been making before, $15, $20, or $30 an hour. And that's a large group of people. How many? Minimally 50 million. That's the lowest number that they could come up with, 49.9% as of this morning. More realistically, because you must take into account how many live in a family with a breadwinner, and that's four, so you're dealing with 240 million Americans who are now challenged. And that's who's not getting any attention. And that's unfortunate. Well, surely we could do something. We could do what they're going to do in England. The United Kingdom, the unions there, are planning a winter of discontent. They sent out ballots to more than 1 million workers for the biggest general strike since 1926. Millions of workers, including police, firefighters, healthcare workers, teachers, and prison officers, are going to strike over the bitter pension road. Didn't I tell you it was going to come? I said that you're going to start seeing when people's personal pensions are cut back, when their services are cut back, they're going to protest. It's happening. But surely the union workers in America, A, would throw out many of the corrupt heads of their union who end up getting in bed with the Democrats or in some case the Republicans, but never for the benefit of their workers, like with NAFTA and GATT, etc. They could do a general strike. You could have all the school teachers in America do a general strike in support of those who don't have work, right? Never going to happen. But the police and the firefighters, they could go on strike. They're union, right? Never going to happen. Well, surely then, where's solidarity? Doesn't exist. Those are my thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts. Give us a call, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. For any of the issues that I've just discussed, your turn to share your points of view. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment.
Feel
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Some good stuff going to happen. First and foremost, for all of you who've been making changes, who are thinking independently, I want to say thank you for having an independent mind, not one of a rigid ideologue behind the Democrats or Republicans who have totally betrayed the core values that they both had at one time. I'm going to celebrate this. We're having a celebration party, free, a dance party. Come and dance, have a good time. It's going to be a disco party. That's why I'm going to play disco music. It's next Thursday night at an all-green nightclub, the only one I know of in New York City. And I haven't had a dance party in 2 years. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you want to come and dance and have a great time, and it's totally free. You don't have to buy drinks. You just socialize. Young or old, doesn't matter. I want you to come and have fun. And so all you have to do is call and let us know so we don't overbook the club. That's always a problem because we, like our everything we do is always filled to capacity. And every dance party, every one of the 51 dance parties we've done over the years to celebrate have been filled. So call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And join me. The first hour there, I'm just going to be off in the corner signing books because everyone likes to have some books signed, so bring your books. I'll be happy to sign it, and then I'm going to dance too. So I look forward to dancing with you and sharing a wonderful evening in a drug-free and cigarette-free and positive environment. 877-627-5065. It'll be a lot of fun. Now, let's say hello to Desiree from Brooklyn. Hi, Desiree.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I would just like to comment about people in general. I think one of the problems socially is that our government brainwashes us into being suspicious of everyone around us, such as the campaign, if you see something, say something. And this creates friction. It creates tension and suspicion among neighbors, among people, even in the workplace. It's very unhealthy.
I would agree with that because you can always find something that you can feel is suspect about someone's behavior. But that's what happens when we become a police state, when we become a plutocracy controlled by an oligarchical elite who get what they want. We have to become independent enough to realize what is truth, what is not, what is a reasonable concern, and what is not, what is exaggerating fears in order to control our behavior. I appreciate your input, Desiree. Thank you. Joining me in studio, Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. So right now we have about 15 volunteers, and we're still looking for more for next Wednesday, September 21st. If you can please call me at 646-926-5428. Really could use the help. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, what's going to be happening is next Wednesday, starting at 5 p.m., we're going, for those who have not seen it, we're going to have a special showing of the full showing, director's cut, which no one has seen yet, of Knocking on the Devil's Door, Dead and Nuclear Legacy, at the Ethical Culture Center on 64th and Center Park West. Beautiful building. And it's already packed. We have no more seats available and haven't for some time. And then at 7 o'clock, we're having a panel where we have children coming in from Fukushima and Organic Farm Fukushima, the truth about Fukushima, the truth about the Japanese crisis, where they know that 36.4 million people living in the Tokyo area are at risk, but they're not being honest. The Japanese government's not honest, the Prime Minister's not honest, and of course no one in our government's honest about this. Mm-hmm. And so what does it mean? So we're talking with the leading activist who's coming in. Vandana Shiva is coming in, Greg Palast is coming in, Carl Grossman, Harvey Wasserman. So we have a whole group that's going to lead an hour and a half, excuse me, to an hour and 45-minute conversation on this. That'll be historic. It'll be broadcast throughout the world over the Internet. And then we're going to have the world premiere of Death by Medicine. This is a powerful film. I mean powerful. And I only use people in it who are at the heart of Orthodox medicine. I felt if I was going to make an argument to show what's wrong or right and what needs to be changed, let people who are on the inside of the beast tell us the story. But then wait till you see what happens when we followed a couple over a year trying to get them off psychiatric medications, with the woman should never have been on. And whoa, I mean, you will not believe what happens. You won't believe it. It's scary. So that's, and we're going to give to each person who comes a copy of each tape plus my new book as a gift, a $100 value. But right now, there are no reservations available. All right, so don't even call. But volunteer so it runs as smooth as silk and can call you. They'll get copies of the books, book, two tapes, and have a chance to see the second film, but not the first one because they're going to be working busy. All right, so give your number again.
646-926-5428. Just one last comment going over your Monday night show, The Progressive Commentary, at 7 p.m. We've had a new record with downloads by unique listeners. We had over 50,000 this week alone so far that were unique listeners. That doesn't mean
all. Days.
Yeah, that doesn't mean everyone has downloaded, just the unique listeners. So that's very impressive.
That's good. Well, that would be about 140,000 by the end of the week.
Yeah.
All right, that's not bad.
No, it's very good.
It's happening. It shows that people want to hear more serious topics. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
In studio, Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. You've been reading the mail. What's it say? I've been filming, so I haven't had a chance.
Right, yes. Good afternoon. Could we please reiterate the email that came from Claire in Boston? We didn't get to the answer yet, unfortunately, but she's concerned that so many of our problems could be solved if we approached them from the perspective of love, and we don't seem to be capable of doing this. Could you address this, please?
Of course I can, but first, in our society today, we do not have a unifying vocabulary that establishes the full meaning of expressed love. When a society lacks the vocabulary to express love's full meaning, then how can you implement what you cannot even define? So we have to start there. When I see the attacks, the left to the right to the left, as if these are the only two ways of approaching a problem, and their minions, their policymakers, and opinion leaders, I do not see as having solutions at all. Instead, I believe that we have to understand that love is not understood. We're almost illiterate in the language of love because of our ego-based dominant culture. This lack of fluency stems from a failure to distinguish between the it connection, where the other is, in effect, an object, and the I, where the other person is a mensch, a lover, a special life force. If you objectify that which you claim to love, then it's not love. It's subjectification. And hence, that person becomes a commodity and not a full-breathing, special human being. And hence, the people around you become objects of disdain if they are different. When you're coming from love, they are not objects of disdain. They are objects to connect with at an important level. And I think this is important because if you don't comprehend that a person cannot be treated like an object to be manipulated, then we will never reach a level at which we can fully live in the I-thou relationship. Our society will continue to be illiterate on these two dimensions of language and living and relating or not relating. If you're living in an ego-based, I-it mental life, love in the deeper sense is not available. So first off, let's examine the ego-centered life, which is barred from the deepest experiences of love. Looking at emotional displacement and intellectual short-sightedness that connects to an inability to express love. In a relationship, the ability to fully understand the other person and to see what is authentic within the other person. Because love can only manifest if you've connected with what is authentic in the other person. That means you shouldn't fall in love with the illusion. You shouldn't fall in love with the theme, with the beautifully manufactured stories. Most people master their story, so you fall in love with their story. What happens when you then at some point have to meet the real person? Then we become disappointed. And then we say we fall out of love. From the earliest ages, we're taught that compromising is the only way to be realistic in this world, and that you have to abandon what you really believe in to fit in, to get ahead, and to achieve something. The problem is that the more we compromise and abandon the highest things we believe in, love, kindness, generosity, caring for others, the more we sacrifice those in order to achieve whatever is achievable within the way that our workplace is structured, the way our family life is constructed, the more we find ourselves being miserable and unhappy. the desire to follow the straight and narrow in our society within the limiting confines of the mainstream social contract means that we block and override, often subconsciously, many humanitarian impulses that seem out of place. For example, we shouldn't have anyone losing their home, because if we all work together to support other people in their cause, then we would show that you can't take this person's home away, because then you're going to take my home away. And if no one cares about that person, then who's going to care about me? No one. If I don't stand up and protest in my union, another person in another union, then who's going to stand up and protest when my time comes? No one. Because you were selfish. Well, then I wasn't in love. It's not being in love. You weren't manifesting love. Because if you're manifesting love, you're also manifesting a connection that is deep and authentic with the other person and their cause, not just your own selfish pursuits. That's the it, the I. My block, my team, my wife, my children, my school, my job, my things, that what comes first. Where is there any vulnerability here? One way to discourage the flowing and hence the flowering of love in your life is to stop a positive impulse in its track by multiplying evasive and rationalizations. Instead of moving to act compassionately, we often load all of our concerns on the side of worries and doubts. I can't go out feeding all the poor. There are too many. Yeah, why don't you feed one? I can't get a coat in the winter for that homeless guy. Then everybody's going to want one. Do it for one. I can't. So instead of doing anything, we do nothing. And then when we do something, we do it only as a token to appease our guilt. Where then does love come into that? Underlying how a common dilemma of American city life, the witnessing of a person in distress, when do we stop and help, or do we continue with an inner numbing? The conformist, blocking, and numbing are all products of a skewed sense of values and bad programming. I recently had on the program Professor Robert Thurman, a man who I have an enormous amount of respect for. He's professor of Tibetan Buddhist Studies at Columbia University and the author of The Essential Tibetan Buddhism. And he said something interesting to me, but I don't believe he said it on the air. I don't believe the mic was on. I believe it was before we came on. I asked him about his teaching. He says, Gary, I teach at Columbia University, and this is supposed to be a great university. We don't teach our students how to be decent human beings. At Columbia University, all they're trained is how to manipulate, how to be clever, how to trick, and how to outwit people, and how to operate under high pressure and deferred gratification. And to what end? He said they're supposed to get out and get ahead so that naturally they just all want to go straight out to Wall Street or straight out to some other big firm, make as much money as they can. Well, you know, there was a time, Elizabeth, in American history where you were not judged based upon the money you had. People who held positions of influence or status were not necessarily those who were wealthy. They were people of integrity, people of wisdom. Do you know that if you looked at the wealth of Thomas Jefferson, he was a pauper? Did you know that?
No.
Without question, the single most important president, the most brilliant president in American history, the greatest president in American history, was only allowed to live in the house he had because his creditors did not want to throw him out. He was bankrupt. Okay? A lot of people have held positions because we respected who they were. Today, you think a status is connected with money, and therefore money is the key to everything, including happiness. Yet all the research, even the everyday evidence, shows that beyond a certain point of material goods, the happiness quotient goes down. People become more stressed with the more they have. Even the concept of, who was it? It was George Simmel, the great sociologist, who said the concept of God has its deeper essence in the fact that all the varieties and contracts of the world reach unity in it. In a perverse way, money also has become the God of today because it supersedes all other qualities in its pervasiveness. And interesting in the absolute sufficient expression and equivalent of all values. Hence, wherever you go in the world, as long as you're going with power and money and celebrity, you're considered exceptional. You're respected for no other reason because you have that money. So you become the God in that moment. How unfortunate. But where's the love? How did you spend your money? How did you make your money? Was there love in how you did it? Was there love of other people, the workers? Were they treated with respect, with nature? Is this something that made us healthier or sicker? Isn't that important? Not in the absolutism of true believers, in the pure need to make money. So I'm suggesting that we must look at love at a much deeper level. We must look at love as what we can live to express ourselves without fear. Because the moment you bring fear into the equation, you're no longer sharing love. You're sharing the uncertainty and insecurity of fear. A person coming from love is not afraid of the consequences of what they're not willing to compromise. Everything else that is a compromise is done so in the absence of love. Hope that answers your question. In a moment, my guest, please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Joining me in studio now is Curtis Ellis. I gave you his bio earlier. Nice to have you with us, Curtis.
Nice to be here, Gary.
Curtis, you're spending a lot of time now trying to get people to be aware of what we can do to put people back to work, protect their living standards, and look honestly at our treaties like NAFTA and GATT that many stations, including many Pacifica stations, refuse for political and ideological reasons to do honest interpretations of, because it would mean bringing in Bill Clinton and other Democrats that sold us out, including with Glass-Steagall. Tell us about what you're doing, why this is important from a humanistic perspective.
I'm the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. You can see AmericanJobsAlliance.com. You can see what we're doing. We have organized thousands of people across the country and across the political spectrum to contact their members of Congress and let them know that we put American jobs first, and that treaties like NAFTA, and now there are three of them coming before Congress, with Korea, Colombia, and Panama, are destructive to the American way of life, to everything that we hold decent, and will further outsource jobs to other countries. We believe that for all the money of the Fortune 100 companies that are lobbying to outsource more jobs to cheap foreign labor countries like China, where there are no standards of decency in labor, where there are no environmental standards, for all of the money that's being lobbied to make Congress pass these treaties, there are more people who agree with you, Gary, and agree with me, and the American people believe that the jobs should be here. We should be making what we buy. We like our air clean and our water clean. We like having weekends and decent working conditions, and the products we buy and use every day should be made by these standards. And so if we all get organized and contact our members of Congress, we have more votes than the other side has money. Because remember, the money from the lobbyists is used by the members of Congress to buy campaign ads to convince voters to vote for them. But if these members of Congress hear from millions of voters directly saying, I will not vote for you if you vote for these Korea free trade agreements and treaties like that, If they hear directly from millions of voters saying, vote against those treaties or I will not vote for you, they'll tell the lobbyists, I'll take your money, but I'm not going to give you my vote. Otherwise, I won't be here, and I like my job. So we are organizing people at AmericanJobsAlliance.com through the website. You can contact your member of Congress and send them an email. Call them. We'll actually patch you through and make a telephone call or send an email. So you can tell the members of Congress that globalization under the current rules doesn't work for you, doesn't work for America, doesn't work for what we hold dear. We have fought long and hard in this country to establish certain standards, and those standards are being disposed of. They're being exported along with our
But
jobs.
I hold the unions responsible at one level. You have enough power in the unions, the teachers' unions, all the other unions. If those unions chose to keep American jobs here, to keep manufacturers here, they could have general strikes. You have a general strike in the United States. When was the last general strike in the United States?
It was in Seattle in around 1920.
That's correct. We have not had another major strike. We would suddenly send a message that would get everyone's attention.
Well, I guess what we're talking about is a citizen strike.
We can stop. I say every member of Congress should be replaced.
I agree.
All right? Get rid of them. Let them go. I wish them well. They're all going to be very rich. They're going to have all the retainers from all the people who they did their bidding. Fine. Let them do that. But let's get real people into power. Let's get campaign laws so that no outside funding of any kind from any source is allowed. Let's do the things we need to do to take back America. And then let's get the Federal Reserve to give small businesses that qualify loans at zero interest for 2 years and start repaying it in 2 years, providing that the money they get to help their business and the employees they hire, they must hire a living wage. Therefore, you're bringing businesses back to every city and town in the United States. You're giving people a living wage, not an exploiting them. And then you're going to give that money back to the American public with a small within a small period of time. So you just created anywhere between 6 to 10 million new jobs, jobs that are not, Walmart jobs.
Right.
And that's what we need.
And you've done it without spending any federal monies, really, by doing zero interest loans.
That's correct. No inflation.
No inflation. No large government bureaucracies created to hand out money. And that's interesting. That's a jobs program that we can all believe in. And we say at the American Jobs Alliance, we need to make what we buy and buy what we make. And what you've just laid out there is a plan for putting Americans to work making the things that we buy all the time, that we use every day. There's a huge local food movement. Buy locally, support your local farmers, support the local rural economy. I agree with that entirely, and we're saying extend that out. If it's good enough for the food we buy, it's good enough for the clothes we buy. Let's support our local clothing maker. Let's support our local textile worker. Let's support our local cotton farmer. Let's support our local goods manufacturer. Clothing, food, the manufactured goods we use every day.
At the end of the day, people are going to argue, but you can't do that, Curtis, because, and by the way, I want to thank all of you who continue to listen over Progressive Radio Network, because it's the number one cost they're going to say is labor, and then the adjunctive costs around labor, like health insurance, workman's compensation, OSHA requirements, EPA requirements. So if we take that job of making those dresses from down on 22nd Street and we send them out to Taiwan, or better, Bangladesh, we can get a woman there who's willing to work 16 hours a day, who is not allowed to talk, who a man walks up and down the aisles with a switch in his hand and will smack the women across the hands or the face. The woman has to drink from water that's septic. She is allowed only two breaks of 5 minutes a day. She makes a grand total of $5.14 a week, and she frequently is seen by hundreds of thousands of other women at midnight, 1 a.m., walking through the streets, the capital of Bangladesh, because they can't afford bus to get home. Then she has to go home, and she has to make meal for the next day, wash the children's clothing. She may get an hour of sleep, and then she starts again. Her work life is only 30 years. They fire them at 30 years because they're of no value. Plus, they have environmental damage to their lungs from the dust that gets into the air, etc. But these are 900 million garments last year made in Bangladesh by about 2 million women. And every one of the major, or almost all the major clothing people in the United States got their clothes there. Some are tricky. If you put the buttons on in Italy, you can call it Italian made. If you put the zipper on...
It's interesting because under the Korea Free Trade Agreement, which is coming before Congress as soon as next month, only one-third of the product has to have Korean content to be called made in Korea. So it can come from Bangladesh.
Yes,
as
that's
you just
correct.
Say.
So we, the American people, have to ask ourselves this. Would I rather buy a garment that was made under virtually slave labor so I can get a discount and therefore care nothing about the American worker who once made this with a living wage? That's my choice.
Right.
So we have to let people know that if you're going to support work for Americans, support buying things made in America by Americans, not in Bangladesh clothes or China. I have nothing against Chinese people.
No.
I have nothing against any of the people around the world. But I don't want to see American jobs and whole American industries gone because, oh, you have the union, you have too much expenses, too much regulation. It's not about regulation. It's about what will it cost to keep an environment clean and safe for the people working there and products safe that you're going to sell. You can make all the money you want, make all the profit. No one's against you making a profit, providing that in the process you don't end up destroying people's lives by making something that you don't want to be regulated. So the regulations are there to help protect us and protect our environment. And if you want to know what happens when you don't have regulations, go to China.
Right. You can see it before you get there. It's so dirty. Now, people say, yes, it'll cost more and Americans don't want to spend more. I was just having this discussion on radio in New Hampshire this morning. Now, I'll admit, I'm 57 years old. I did not grow up in a wealthy household. We were comfortable, but we were not wealthy. We were solidly middle class. The shoes I wore were made in New Hampshire. The clothing I wore was made probably... down on 38th Street or somewhere down south. The towels in our bathroom were from the Carolinas. Everything in our house, the furniture, was made in America because that's the way the country was in the 1960s. Somehow, I didn't go barefoot and I didn't wear rags. We were able to afford the clothing and the food and the shoes and the furniture that we used every day.
But you see, American corporations have now set up a dualistic competitive system. They're exporting jobs, American jobs, to another country that brings that product back in.
Exactly.
And then says, oh, what do you want? A cheaper product or spending more on that product? That's an unfair way. We should ban doing manufacturing jobs outside the United States. In other words,
absolutely,
we've got to stop the exporting of jobs. And who does Obama hire? The former head of General Electric,
Mr. Immelt,
who is known for being successful in transferring his business over to China and other countries and causing Americans to lose their labor. There doesn't seem to be any paradoxical thoughts in this administration. So we come to this point where we have to make some sacrifice. I would rather pay more and know it's made in USA and supporting a living wage than buy anything I might like that's made elsewhere that costs people a quality of life where it was made and cost Americans their job. I think we have to make personal decisions. But right now, as I said earlier in the show, you heard me say, and I do not apologize for it, that we are now living a selfish existence. We care only about ourselves. To get to where you need to be, and I hope we get, we have to become more selfless.
There is a moral dimension to the fight that we're doing at the American Jobs Alliance, and it's exactly what you're talking about, Gary. There is a moral dimension to this. All of the great faiths throughout the ages have taught us that we are our brother's keeper and our sister's keeper too. That there is a connection between people. God is love, and we have to care for each other. And that means that we don't take advantage of people, put them in virtual slavery and actual slavery conditions so that we can have a cheaper throwaway T-shirt at the end of the day. We have to care about people. I've said, so we pay a little bit more for our clothing or for our flat-screen TV, but don't you want to see your neighbor have a job and not be living on food stamps or eating out of a garbage can?
Well, I think most people would say yes if they're coming from love.
That's right.
But more often than not now, as one of our listeners said earlier, what's my neighbor doing? Is that unusual? Should I turn him into Homeland Security?
Right.
Why get a reward? Why get on Dancing with the people who turn people in? Curtis Ellis, thank you very much for being here. AmericanJobsAlliance.com. AmericanJobsAlliance.com. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.
Studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Tappenfeld.